This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Ben Shelton. He's Legislative Director for Conservation Voters New Mexico, and Liliana Castillo, who is the Communications Director. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So here we are in the midst of the legislative session, I guess a little more than halfway through at this point, and Conservation Voters New Mexico does something every year, which is that they have a scorecard where they rate legislators on whether they have voted against or in favor of bills that keep New Mexico clean and healthy in terms of our land, air, and water. And during the session, there's a lot of bills that you are either backing or saying maybe are not so good for the state. And we're here to talk about some of those bills, what they do, where they're at. So welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And there's 9 days left.
9 days left. Oh, gosh,
we're
a lot more than halfway through.
Yeah.
I mean, what can happen in 9 days?
It's amazing what can happen in nine days when someone wants it to.
Well, that's a good point. So let's talk about some of the bills. I believe that you guys named this bill, and that it was not that it's not written that way, but it's, you call it the uranium blackmail bill. What's that about?
That is a bill that is actually a little bit, I've been told we should stop calling it that, because it does do a slightly different thing than in years past. What the uranium bill does is it ties funding for the cleanup of the extensive uranium pollution in the Grants Mineral Belt area in Cibolo and McKinley counties. It ties the funding for that to a tax on new uranium mining.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, of course, we all know there hasn't been any uranium mining in the state of New Mexico since 1988.
Which means that in this bill, if there's no tax, there's no cleanup?
If there's no new
mining, there's no cleanup.
There's no cleanup. There's another funding mechanism that would pull money into this cleanup fund out of fees, rental fees, on interim storage for radioactive waste. So there's two mechanisms to fund this: new uranium mining, or allowing the state of New Mexico to become a dumping ground. And that's the way that money would go into this. So we oppose it because it's not actually a serious cleanup funding plan at all.
Very interesting. And that comes out of I don't know what kind of mind that comes out of, but it's not really intended, as you say, to clean up existing uranium waste.
Yeah, and the argument is, and there are arguments on the other side of this, is, well, if it might put money into uranium cleanup, why not do it? And the reason is, it is not serious. It might actually be preclusive because of the way that state government tends to work. It might be preclusive of more meaningful action, actually funding some cleanup. And it's also just humongously disrespectful to communities that have dealt with generations of health problems due to the impacts of not only uranium mining, but the tailings piles and sort of the legacy waste issues.
Does this bill make any provisions for the cleanup of waste from new uranium mining?
Well, the assumption would be that, yeah, it would. So if you are doing new uranium mining, the funds that you would get on the taxes from that would maybe not even cover the cost of cleanup for the uranium mining that you're actually doing in that moment.
Has anyone done the math on this?
There's some pretty easy napkin math to be done. This new bill would say that 50 cents of every pound of uranium that we pull out of the Grants Mineral Belt would go into this fund. The problem is that there is conservatively estimated, not to get too mathematical on you, there's conservatively estimated to be about 300 million pounds of uranium ore left in the mineral belt. So dividing that by, in half is $150 million, because 50 cents a pound. $150 million is maybe enough to clean up two and maybe three sites, and there are over 130 sites across all of western New Mexico. So not only will it likely not provide any funding, if it did, it would barely scratch the surface.
Got it.
And another thing that's, I think, important to mention is that well, it's hard to say one community feels one way about a whole thing, but there are huge groups of people in these communities that do not support this as a way to raise those funds.
Right.
Right. And because they have endured years and generations of the health impacts from the mining, the actual mining that their families were involved in, or the legacy waste that has been sitting around, toxic and sitting around in their communities for decades, and trying to tie it, the cleanup of that to bringing that back to their communities is not something they're in favor of.
And we will have some members of those communities joining us on Thursday, February 11th, this Thursday, to speak with some legislators at the Roundhouse. It's Land, Water, and Wildlife Day, and we'll be getting joined by some members of those communities to talk to members and kind of carry that message around the Roundhouse.
Excellent. So next on the list is oil and gas tax breaks. Now, that's a funny one to me because it is the revenue from oil and gas that funds pretty much all of New Mexico, and that's really down this year because prices are low. So are we basically giving breaks in order to have even less revenue coming into the coffers of New Mexico?
Yeah, that is roughly the proposal on that. And, you know, the reason that they are talking about putting these breaks in place is to try to save some of these jobs that are tied to oil and gas, you know, particularly in the Eddy Lee County and then up in San Juan County as well. The problem is that if you put these breaks in place and you keep some of these marginal wells open, a lot of these tax breaks are aimed at what they call stripper wells. So they're wells that are very late in their sort of production life. They're not producing very much, and they're just barely profitable. And those are the ones that when low prices get low, those are the ones that they think about capping. So if you give a tax break on these stripper wells and the price of oil and gas continues to go down, they may close anyways, even with the tax break. We might be throwing millions of dollars of state money in a time that we can really not afford it into sort of a gamble that may not even pay off for reasons that we have no control over.
Now, this is a tax that is proposed by whom?
These particular breaks, there's three different bills. They have been introduced by Representative James Strickler. He's from San Juan County. Senator Gay Kernan, and then also Representative Nate Gentry.
And they're all in sort of oil and gas country?
I believe Representative Gentry is a Bernalillo County. I think he's kind of Albuquerque-based. Representative Chairman Strickler, he chairs the House Energy Committee. He is based up in Farmington.
Okay. So this is something that you're against. Now, this bill and these set of bills in particular, where are they in their committees? Are they in the House? Are they in the Senate? What's going on?
So none of these have hit the floor yet. They're still working their way sort of through the committee, so the winding committee path, particularly the ones on the House side. The Senate bill just got its first hearing I want to say Monday. So they're on their way. Neither of them have come to the floor for floor debate yet, and they're in the process of being amended and tweaked a little bit.
And so we will see how these go, but with 9 days left, getting through both houses and all the committees it needs and having floor votes that are successful on both sides, I mean, this is a 30-day session. It does seem unlikely.
Sure. I mean, and Lily pointed out that 9 days is a lot of time and a lot can happen, but certainly as we get into this last week, week and a half, you can start to hear the clock ticking pretty loudly. It gets to the point where if you're postponing things a day or two, you're actually putting a pretty big dent in their chances of becoming a law.
Now, what about the uranium bill? Has that gotten any traction?
The uranium bill has. Now, because this is a budget session, right, so the everything that is introduced either has to be related to the budget and revenue and taxation, or it needs to have a special message from the governor, basically opening that area for, you know, legislation. This bill would need a special message from the governor, the uranium bill, and it has not gotten one yet.
Ah.
But we are that concerned about this bill. We think it's that bad of an idea that we are willing to really go to work on it and make sure people know about it just to make extra sure that should this get a message from the governor, she and the legislature hear loud and clear that this is something that folks in the communities really oppose and it's a non-solution.
It's so brazen.
Yeah. One thing that there's a lot of chutzpah involved in some of these bills that we oppose.
There is indeed. All right. Well, let's go to some of the ones that you guys are in favor of, and one is the rooftop solar tax credit. Now, that already exists. Is that correct?
Yes, that's an extension of a current tax credit that goes to homeowners, not just homeowners, actually. It's for residential, business, and agricultural solar systems that they choose to install in their home or business. And right now, what we're urging the legislature to do is extend that tax credit. It's about to expire at the end of this year. And so that is what we're working on. And we think it's really important to keep that tax credit in place, especially given how much solar is growing in New Mexico and how many jobs it's providing. But most importantly, it really the solar tax credit really helps make solar, like rooftop solar, more affordable for more New Mexican families. And that's the key to it, really.
Another key piece for our support is that it is an existing tax credit. It's, you know, people talk about the new money, how they thought there was going to be $30 million and then maybe $20 million. This would not be a new money item. This is something that's already sort of, if you can think about it, as being under the line. There are some great bills out there that would do some very environmentally friendly things that involve expenditures that are over the line. And it's very hard for us to support them for that reason. But this is the important thing about a lot of these solar tax credit bills is that they are existing things. We know they work. We have 1,600 jobs in New Mexico that come out of the solar industry. And we just want to kind of keep that growth trend growing. It's one of the industries that is really adding jobs to the state.
That's a lot of jobs for a state of our size.
It is. It is. And it's growing at pretty quickly. I mean, a lot of these firms are had their year-over-year growth is just amazing. It's really impressive. And it's not just the number of jobs. I think we have over 95 solar firms, which is a really good number. I mean, that's a lot of smaller installers and, you know, smaller firms that are operating in the state.
Yeah.
One sort of criticism of the solar industry is that it's, you know, there's the big players and the big California firms and stuff. And they're here too. And they're providing jobs. But there's also a lot of small businesses that are being spun off and created by these sorts of tax credits.
In other states, they have solar panel leasing. So instead of buying solar panels for your house, you lease them. Does this tax credit affect people who are going in that direction? I don't even know how much of that we have in New Mexico.
I think that's becoming a bigger and bigger, something that's more available for people than in past years. But this bill is actually just for purchase of a rooftop solar system. I know that last year there was an attempt to bring in tax credit for leasing of solar. And I think that's still something we're just dealing with as a state, trying to figure out all the details around those contracts and that kind of thing.
It is interesting when you have a new industry that is just finding its identity and finding the way it works, because the law has to be created, much less keep up with what's actually happening.
Sure. And it's hard to get a grip on, especially with new industries, it's hard to really get the data to figure out, you know, where they are, how they operate, what we need to do so that we can really legislate effectively. We're seeing some growing pains with that right now. We've got a bill that we oppose that would impose all sorts of reporting requirements and sort of strange provisions on solar installers regarding, you know, guaranteeing certain output and making sure, you know, guaranteeing certain bill outcomes, like on bill outcomes, how much you'll pay 5 years from now on your bill. And, you know, it's not really effective. It doesn't speak to how we do things in New Mexico and how the industry actually operates here. It's hard is in the right place. It's trying to protect consumers from, you know, from getting into something that they don't really fully understand. But at the same time, it's just not quite it's not ready. That's that piece of legislation that hasn't been vetted for how the industry operates here and what we're working on. So that's an example of, growing pains.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to figure out how to shepherd this industry in the state as best we can. And it takes a little bit of hard work, and a little bit of elbow grease.
Now, it's hard to even understand what that bill is about, because once you install solar panels, your fuel is the sun, which falls on your house for free.
Sure. Yeah. And it's very hard to sort of forecast what the price of energy is going to be in 5 years. I mean, there's some provisions in this bill. This is HB 256. There's some provisions in there that just don't appear to have any connection to consumer protection at all. Part of it is just, it's a very confusing bill. And I think the message to take away from it is we are still learning as a state how to best regulate and how to best sort of integrate this industry into our portfolio effectively.
Now, where is the solar rooftop credit at right now in terms of its renewal?
It's actually in a similar place as the oil and gas tax breaks. As the legislature is kind of figuring out the details of the budget, the House Ways and Means Committee and I believe the Senate Finance Committee will decide if those bills will be a part of the tax package for this year.
A lot of times when these bills get to committee, they'll sort of just put them on pause for a second while they wait for the budget to come through. The budget came through yesterday, I believe, and they're in the process of amending it actually possibly as we speak.
When there is a bill like this, I mean, the reason you give tax credits is to stimulate industries and therefore bring in new tax revenue from those industries. So you have both the corporations, the 95 different solar companies that are taxed, and the employees working for them paying income tax. Has the math been done on the one hand, the money lost from the tax credit, on the other hand, the money gained from the revenue?
I'm not entirely sure that the math has been done to see what the net overall impact on the tax, on sort of tax revenue is. I think right now people are very much more focused on the jobs end of it.
Yeah.
Because the state is lagging so badly in job creation and in employment and in wage growth is another one. I mean, the one of the big points about this is that, yeah, you know, you're going to give a tax credit and we're going to pay a little bit out using the tax code, but the wage growth, these are really, you know, pretty good paying jobs. These aren't jobs that have hidden costs associated with making people sick, you know, in the health bill. So I think that's really the math that's moving legislators on behind these.
What do you
right
mean
now.
Hidden costs of making people sick?
Well, if you've got a low paying job that has adverse health effects, let's say,
working in the coal industry, or the uranium industry.
Exactly. That's a job that actually takes money out of the state by, you know, making people sick. That job doesn't pay you as much because you wind up paying out in terms of, you know, higher health insurance premiums because of your health.
Right. Okay. Very interesting. So we're talking to Ben Shelton and Liliana Castillo of Conservation Voters New Mexico. There is another bill that would protect the Gila River, and that has been a subject of much discussion over many years. And where is that at now? Give us a little background on the Gila River and then what this bill is about.
So that is a bill introduced by Senator Morales, Senator Howie Morales. It is still awaiting its first committee hearing, but that's not necessarily a death knell or anything. It certainly can move very quickly once it gets going. What this bill would do would take money that is otherwise sort of allocated towards diverting the Gila River, which would be an environmentally sort of disastrous thing to do, and put it to good use. I would take it and invest that money in upgrading water systems in Grant County. And the big effect of that, one of the best things it does, is puts that cash to good use before it can be put to bad use, effectively. This Gila project is in the federal review process right now, so there's a limited amount of things that the state can do to protect itself from this large and terrible idea. And one of the things that we can do right now is, of that sort of, there's a $100 million cap of federal funds that are allotted to the state of New Mexico, and take some of that $100 million, I think in this case this is a $13 million proposal, and really put it to work for the folks in Grant County right away.
And what are some of those good things that would happen as a result of that $13 million?
And it looks like the bill would be, or the funds, that, and that's federal funds as well. They're not state funds,
right.
So
right.
It's revenue neutral, as we like to say. It looks like the money would be utilized for a project called the Grant County Regional Water Supply Project, which would improve and augment water supplies to serve 26,000 people in central Grant County. And this would help meet long-term water supplies for 90% of Grant County's population, and nearly half of the population of Southwest New Mexico at obviously a fraction of the cost of a Gila River diversion project.
Right, right. What are some of the kind of worst case scenarios for the Gila River that you're watching out for?
The Gila is the last free flowing river in the state of New Mexico, and this project would put that to an end in the name of diverting water that is only really there occasionally. This is a river that is sort of intermittent. It wouldn't necessarily provide a benefit to anyone in the state, and it would cost potentially as much as, I mean, estimates have put this, the price tag for this, as high as $1 billion. Now, if the federal government
is...
To divert water
that's not always there.
Exactly. And $100 million of that is from the feds, and the other 800 to 900 million would come, well, presumably out of state coffers to do something that's harmful to the environment and marginally effective to anybody at all.
And that's another important point, right, is that the Interstate Stream Commission has not been able to identify where this other $800, $900 million is going to come from. And obviously the natural choice would be the state of New Mexico. I mean, it's going to come from taxpayers one way or the other.
Now, if this bill to protect the Gila doesn't pass, what happens?
Unfortunately, that means that the money that we're trying to get allocated towards alternative projects for water conservation in Grant County would be left to the use of the Interstate Stream Commission, which right now they've been spending most of their money trying to evaluate the Gila River Diversion Project with consultants and that kind of thing. So it's just kind of money that sits in their account that they can use, I think, pretty much however they want.
We could see some of it disappear to legal fees if it comes down to legal action over the Gila Diversion Project. So it's a little bit of a use it or lose it situation for the state right now.
So we've seen that many times, which is money goes towards projects that never get done. But in the meantime, a lot of money is spent talking about it, consulting about it, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
All right, then. So how can people make their voices heard? This Thursday is Wildland Water and Wildlife Advocacy Day at the Roundhouse. What should people do? Can they show up?
Yeah. This is a day for the environmental and conservation communities to come together and really show the legislature that there is broad-based support from the organizations themselves to the public, just everyday New Mexicans, that they care about protecting our climate, clean air, clean water, and that they care for, they want protections for our wildlife and wildlands in New Mexico. And so there is activities going on from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. all day at the Roundhouse in the Rotunda area on the second floor. There's a press conference at noon. And I believe that a lot of the groups will be tabling most of the day, so you can come by and hang out with us and sign a petition.
Tabling means sitting at tables and talking to people?
Yes.
Okay.
And then there will be grassroots lobby trainings at 10:30 a.m. and at 2 p.m. that day. And so we'll gather people together, kind of train them on how to lobby their legislator, and then send them off to go lobby their legislator on whatever issue they're most passionate about.
Do a lot of people tend to show up for those?
We've had some success. Last year there were about 30 people who were participating in grassroots lobby training, I think the community is starting to coalesce around this day. I think this is the third year in a row we've had a day themed this way, and so the community is really coalescing and coming together and doing a lot of great outreach, including, like Ben mentioned, we're going to have a lot of community members from Western New Mexico come in and talk to their legislators about uranium and how it has impacted their families and uranium legacy waste.
Yeah, very interesting. Now, Conservation Voters New Mexico is an organization that is active all year round, not just during the legislature. What do you do the rest of the year?
We have an electoral program that we work in, making sure that conservation candidates are supported, making sure that candidates that are running for offices understand that a lot of people in this state have conservation very high on their list of political electoral priorities. So we do a lot of that. We get involved with the Public Regulatory Commission to make sure that our utilities are being regulated in a way that reflects the sort of priorities of folks in the state and, again, the job growth trajectory that renewables have sort of put us on here. We're involved year-round just making sure that all public officials, the Attorney General, almost every office in the state that has an impact on conservation values hears from our members and makes sure that the environmental community is well represented.
Excellent. Anything else that you want to let people know about before we go?
We talked about some of our high priority bills today, but you can look at our entire list of bills that we're working on and why we support or oppose them on our website at cvnm.org. And you can also sign up there for our email list, which is how you can get plugged in at the most strategic times when you need to call we think it would be impactful for you to call your legislator or sign a petition, that kind of thing.
And Mary Charlotte, I mentioned this last time, and I'd love to plug it again. New Mexico is such a unique state in the level of access that you have to your state legislators.
Yeah.
There's not a security line to get into the Roundhouse. You can walk in there, and you can find your legislator. You sit down in their office, and you wait for them to come back, and you can meet with them. I encourage everybody to just find out who your legislator is, come on over and let them know what you're thinking about, because especially now when they're surrounded by armies of lobbyists, they value hearing from their constituents and the people who vote for them more than ever, and they really need that voice.
Do you have people from remote parts of the state coming up here during the session?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, you were talking about their uranium.
Sure.
That's one example.
Sure. We have folks. Well, you'll see folks from a broad range. I mean, you see people coming representing, you know, the counties and representing all the small towns. But on the conservation side, yeah, we're bringing people in to talk about uranium. The folks down in the Silver City area, obviously very, very concerned about the Gila bill that we discussed. So there's a lot of issues that we work on that are much more impactful in certain parts of the state. You talk about oil and gas and sort of the health impacts and sort of the particularly the health impacts of oil and gas development on communities of color, Latino, Hispanic, and Native communities in the northwest part of the state. So we have folks who are very, very concerned about that. So we'll bring in people to talk about the justice piece of that.
Ben Shelton is Legislative Director and Liliana Castillo, Communications Director of Conservation Voters New Mexico. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
CVNM.org. Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.